Key. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Yeah, it does seem like Monday, doesn't it? We went through this last week, too, with both Christmas and New Year's falling on a Tuesday this year. It just seems like it's the start of the week for a lot of people, right? Yeah. Now, there were some people who worked, you know, New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve, right? Yeah, I did. A lot of people did. And a lot of people even worked yesterday. It was a pretty big day for retail. Not everybody was open, but some people were yesterday. But most folks made a long weekend out of it. You know, if you were able to take Monday off, New Year's Eve, or if that was part of your package, well, good for you. A long weekend, but it does seem like Monday. Well, here we are into the afternoon of Wednesday already, which means that the weekend looms ahead. Could be a short work week for most folks. I don't know. Are schools back in session today? Some are. Some aren't. Depends on your school district. Pat Parker on the other side of the glass is shaking his head. Not too many schools open today? I really don't know. But I know. Back when I was a kid, we walked 5 miles to school, uphill both ways. Come January 2nd, you were back at it, baby. Back at the nose to the grindstone. Well, it depends. Students will soon be back, if not back already. And everybody's back to work today, and we settle down to a normal schedule until, what? Valentine's Day, I guess, huh? Oh, that's right. We have the Martin Luther King holiday coming up in a couple of weeks. That's one of the Monday holidays, first one of the year. Well, anyway, welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's Open Talk on the first portion of the It's Your Turn program today. We're going to be talking a little bit later with a renowned educator, teacher, retired now, but a longtime teacher. His name is Louis Mazzullo, and we're going to be discussing what he sees as crucial areas in which we need to reform education here in the United States. We're not talking about, you know, just changing a math course or something like that. The whole philosophy of education, Mazzullo says, we need to change. You know, we need to rethink some of the current trends in education. So I'll be interested to chat with him. Certainly ask him about what was that former federal program? No Child Left Behind. I think that's behind us now, and I don't think that was such a great success. Well, we'll talk about it a little bit later on the program today with Louis Mazzullo, who's not in Butler. We'll be talking with him in New York City, which is where he taught for many, many years, several decades, as a matter of fact. So that's coming up later on the program. But it's Open Talk right now, 283-2525, 283-2525. Is anybody have the same reaction that I do about what's going on in D.C.? If I hear one more story about the partial government shutdown and the wall, I think my head's going to explode. Man, oh man, it's just constant drum beating, and you know, whew, wow. Now, admittedly, I have not been affected by the partial government shutdown. I haven't visited any national parks, nor do I plan to in the coming weeks. So it hasn't really affected me directly. I do have a couple of people in my extended family who are a little bit unsure about their immediate future in terms of their job or their paycheck. And there are some people around here, you know, who have to worry about that. Some of the folks who work up in the mines up in Boyers, right? Yeah, it's a federal operation. But it's just every newscast, you turn it on, and my eyes just glaze over at this point. I just want to say, hey, let me know whenever you've got something worked out. Until then, please don't badger me with another story about the wall, the beautiful wall, or the partial government shutdown. And while I'm at it, don't badger me with anything more about Antonio Brown either. Really, I got into, that wasn't exactly some heated arguments with some of the guys here at the radio station today. I say cut them, you know. You're allowed to do that in the National Football League, right? You can cut anybody you want, anytime you want. I mean, these super rich pro athletes these days who carry on like prima donnas, they think they can do anything they want with no repercussions whatsoever. I've had it with them, you know. Hey, the guy can catch passes. There's no question about that. But, you know, the latest kerfuffle is, it turns out he didn't play in the final game of the Steelers season against Cincinnati this past Sunday because he was being disciplined by Coach Mike Tomlin. Disciplined for skipping practices and meetings last week after feuding with teammates. And I got the impression from some of the quick interviews that I saw with some of the Steelers over the last couple of days, they've about had it with him, you know. They've just about had it with him. What kind of a teammate is that? The guy's poison. I've thought he was a jerk ever since he did that live Facebook thing from the Steeler locker room. Remember that a couple of years ago? Wow. And he just thinks he can do anything he wants, get away with anything he wants. I'd cut him. But guy said, you can't do that. You wouldn't get anything for him. I say, so what? We didn't make the playoffs with him. We could do the same thing without him, right? He just seems to be poison to me. And I, is it the straw that broke the camel's back? It could be. I'm just tired of these ultra-rich multimillionaires walking around thinking they can do anything they want. And, you know, the rest of the world, go to heck. Oh, yeah? I say to you, go to heck. And I don't want to see him driving up to St. Vincent College training camp in his $8 billion Rolls Royce or helicopter or whatever. I just had it. Yeah. 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk if you've had it. 283-2525. I am mystified as to why people continue to flock to Times Square in New York City for New Year's Eve. Did you see any of that on TV a couple of nights ago, New Year's Eve? I didn't actually stay up until midnight, but I saw some of the video clips, and they were leading up to it, you know. It was pouring down rain. It was chilly rain, too. I mean, it wasn't frigid. But it was cold. It was cold and it was wet. And it was just unending. Those torrential downpours that we had here on New Year's Day during the day had kind of tapered off in our area by all around 10 o'clock at night. But it was still pouring in New York. Just pouring. And you're not allowed to take any umbrellas into Times Square. No umbrellas. Not allowed. No bags. No public restroom facilities. I always assumed that they had like porta-johns or something. No. No porta-johns. No umbrellas. Just stand there for hours in the freezing rain. What? So you can watch a ball drop. You got to be nuts. You got to be out of your mind. Right? And how do you get out of there? I don't know. It just amazes me. The funny thing that I saw on New Year's Eve, I was watching some of the newscasts in the early evening, and one lady, one of the news anchors, one of the Pittsburgh stations, I don't know which one it was, said a million people, it's estimated that a million people will cram into Times Square tonight. I said, what? Wait a minute, what are you saying? A million people? You can't get a million people into Times Square. Then on a newscast an hour later, I heard another newscaster guy say, tens of thousands of people. Well, that makes sense. Okay, I can see that. doesn't make sense, but I can understand it. And then the topper was yesterday morning. I turned on the TV news, and this is a national, it was like, I don't know, the Today Show or Good Morning America or something. And the guy said, 2 million people crowded into Times Square last night. I'm saying, what? Are these people, have they lost their senses? I mean, use a little common sense. 2 million people in Times Square? It's impossible. It's impossible. What does Heinz Field hold? 75,000? Something like that? It's close. Maybe 70,000. You know how many Heinz Fields it would take to get to 1 million people? It would take a bunch. And you're going to put all those people in Times Square at the same time? It's ridiculous. It's not. I'm thinking, don't these people read this copy before they, you know, use it on the air? Don't they ever stop for a second and say, do you think this is impossible? Yes, it's impossible. Open talk at 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. I didn't see where, did they have the polar dip up in Parker in the Allegheny River yesterday? They did? I didn't see any news story on that. I don't know. We had one? They did. Oh, you had it yesterday, Pat. Yeah. Okay, let's go to the people here. It's open talk after all. 283-2525 is our number. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good morning, Dave, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Your subjects intrigue me. I do not want to hear another thing about the shutdown until it's over. The next thing, the NFL situation is beyond anything I can think of. Let Antonio Brown go. He's been a problem off and on for many years. The situation when I hear these astronomical salaries, all, you know, because they can catch a football, throw a football, whatever they do, all I can think of are the policemen and firemen who put their lives on the line every day and don't make even a 50th or a 100th of what these what these professional football players make.
Oh, I hear you.
Then when I do think about the people standing in the rain for hours in New York, I just think, oh, good heavens, what is wrong with this picture?
And what are you going to see? Watch a ball come down. Everybody knows what's going to happen.
Yes.
Live entertainment while you're standing there in the rain. First of all, you can't be close enough with that many people there to see it anyway. I just can't.
True.
I can't see the draw. I can't see the attraction for it. Oh, you're not allowed to have any alcohol either. So you can't have an umbrella. You can't have any alcohol. You can't take any bags.
And I don't know that they could even have enough porta-johns for that number of people, but I was also rather surprised to hear that there weren't any. So at any rate, that would be a long, long time of uncomfortable standing in the rain and everything else. I don't see it. But I'm old, so
I hear you.
What can I say?
Hey, thanks for the call. Good to talk with you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
283-2525 is our number. It's open talk here on the program today. Caller, thanks for waiting. I know you've been there for a while. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi there, Dave. This is Donna from out in the Conakenessing area calling.
Hi, Donna, and from the Conakenessing area. How you doing?
Hey, we are doing great out here.
What's happening in Conakenessing these days?
Well, I wanted to share with the listeners something that my husband and I did yesterday that was very interesting, and we enjoyed it. We went out to Moraine State Park and went on the first day hike.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very nice. It was very well attended, and I was glad of that. There were lots of people and beautiful dogs out there. They had their dogs with them walking on the trail. And we all met at the bike rental area on the North Shore and walked south. We walked on a different path other than the paved regular bike path.
Mm-hmm.
We walked over to McDaniel's Launch and walked over to the breast of the dam, and we're on the North Country Trail for a little bit. It was a very enjoyable afternoon.
A lot of people don't know where the dam is for, you know, they realize that Lake Arthur was formed by damming up Muddy Creek, but they have no idea where the yes. dam is.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And, yeah, we were right near the dam. In fact, you could walk out on the breast of the dam there if you wanted to and look around. And
I did a news story on that on New Year's Eve morning on the early morning show here. Mm-hmm. And Butler Outdoor Club sponsored that hike, and I thought that would be really neat. And I guess you could walk as far as you wanted, you know. If you didn't want to do the whole thing, that was fine.
Yeah,
you could peel off. Did you do the walk under 422? I found that fascinating.
I did not. I went. I didn't do that. I didn't do that leg of the walk. I just sort of circled back around, and I wanted to see the dam because the breast of the dam, I'd never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of stayed in that area. But I read that in the paper too, that they were going to do through a tunnel over in that area under 422, and I thought, oh, that would be neat, but I decided not to do that at the last minute and kind of stayed closer to the McDaniels launch area.
I was assuming that it was over by the bridge where 422 goes, you know, goes over Lake Arthur, the path under the bridge. I assumed that's where it was, but I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know either. So.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
It was very nice, very enjoyable, and the weather was nice. It wasn't. In fact, it was a little warm. I had a few too many clothes on. It got warm as we were walking, but that's certainly better than being cold.
Well, you know, it was 60. Yeah. It was 60 degrees at midnight on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Unheard of, practically.
Yeah. So.
Well, hey, nice to talk with you, Donna. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Dave. Same to you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
283-2525, Donna in Conequanessing there. Let's go to this line next. Phone number is 283-2525. It's Open Talk. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
We know that as long as we hear your voice on the radio, all is well in Butler. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness, that's very kind of you. Thank
you
so much.
Not at all, not at all.
Thank you.
Dave, the reason for my call today is I am complaining. Waste management. I'm in Butler Township, and mm-hmm. we got the barrels. I'm 74 years old, Dave. I can't move those barrels.
Mm.
And not only that, but I don't have a good place along the road to leave them because the way my yard is, they'd be right out on the street and be obstructing or directly in my driveway where they can't be, you know. So,
yeah.
I find the whole thing to be discriminatory against the older folks. Like I said, I can't move those babies, and anybody older than me wouldn't be able to move them, and some people younger than me wouldn't be able to move them.
And you can't really leave them. I mean, you can't leave them out there at the end of the driveway. All that'd be unsightly, you know.
Right.
You got to wheel them. They have wheels on them, right? You lift up.
Oh,
one
they
end.
Do. Yeah. They do. But again, my yard goes down to the road, so mm-hmm. I'd have to try to put them someplace in the yard and drag them back up, and it's just not happening. Not here.
For folks who aren't familiar with this, Butler Township has a new trash hauler as of January 1st, Waste Management, and they delivered over the past couple of weeks. These are huge containers. They're 96 gallons, I think they are, and there's two of them, one for garbage and one for recycling, and you're right, they're big.
And it would take me a couple of months to fill that garbage can. It just wouldn't happen, and even the recycling, it would probably take me 3 months to fill that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that much waste, and again, anybody who is a single person in a household or, you know, couple people, they don't have that much trash, and to charge us the price that they're going to charge, it's nearly $60 a month, that's just... Yeah, that's $60 a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That's just unconscionable. I don't know where the township commissioners got the idea that we really need that. I'm sure there are many people who do need that much. And for those folks, let them, you know, go ahead and pay that, and that's fine. But for myself, our household, we certainly don't need that. And I have to take that up with Butler Township. I called Waste Management. They've told me that I have to take it up with Butler Township, and of course I'm going to do that. I don't know when Butler Township, I understand they made that decision, that final decision, late in the year, November, December. I was not aware that that was happening. Had I known, I would certainly have attended a meeting and let them know that
they
could talk me off of their list.
It's an 8-year contract, too, by the way.
Yes, it is. So. An 8-year contract.
Have you seen this in operation yet? I was talking with, actually, I had Tom Knights, the township manager, here on the program right after they approved that. That was back in November, I think. And he said one of the reasons, one of the rationale is they've got a new pickup method where they'll be able to eliminate some of their personnel. Apparently the truck, the newly designed trucks, will be able to pick up these bins automatically. I would be anxious to see that in action. I have no idea how it's going to work without a person, you know, guiding the cart onto the gizmo.
They want those bins 3 feet apart so that they have room to put their those arms out and pick up whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there's just not any place in my location that's even feasible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big problem for me. I intend to attend the next township commissioner's meeting and voice my displeasure with the whole situation. But I have to believe that there are other folks out there with a problem with this situation.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call, my friend. Good to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Okay. Bye-bye. 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk here on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, 283-2525. Hi, caller. Thanks for your patience in waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave. I listen to your radio station in the morning at 8 o'clock with the news.
Yes.
This morning, there was about three, it sounded like about three other stations coming in. I couldn't even understand the word you and Kate were saying or nothing.
Are you sure you weren't having a problem with your radio?
No. Plays good now. No, that was the first time that ever happened. And I wondered. I mean, did you just cut your power down or?
No, none of that. The only thing that I could guess, and I'm not an engineer, but
yeah,
this time of the year it stays dark so long, and AM radio signals travel much further in the dark.
Okay.
That's why, when I was a kid, I used to listen to WCFL in Chicago and WABC in New York and WBZ in Boston. You could get them at night.
Nice.
Simply
you
because
get them daytime.
No, you can't get them during the daytime.
Yeah.
So it could have been atmospheric conditions. I haven't had any other. We haven't had any word from our engineers or anything that there was any problem.
Yeah.
So.
And I have another complaint.
Yeah.
I travel Ziegler Avenue. I'm out here on the other side of Herman. And, boy, see, the one tree fell down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about three more of them was leaning clean across the road. They're going to come down because that's just that bank they're planted in is just a sandbank from the glass company.
Mm.
And I'm afraid we keep getting, more rain and wind. Well, they're going to come down, maybe, on top of somebody.
I haven't been out that road. It's funny, it was one time last summer, we'd gone out to Herman for something, and coming back, I said, I want to come back Ziegler Avenue, because I haven't come that way in a long time, and I forgot. I got back to the crossroads at Herman there, and I automatically turned down Benbrook Road. And so I haven't been on that road in many, many, many years.
Yeah.
Long, long time ago, the Humane Society shelter used to be on that road before they moved
Correct,
out on Evan City Road, right?
Yeah.
Well,
and that used to be the trash dump where they dumped all the trash.
I did not know that. I'm going to have to take a swing out there and see what you're talking about.
Boy, there's about three of them. Then on out the road, there's a, quite a few of them, trees laying on the wires. I mean, they're big trees. They're not little ones. Be on your, when you're going out from Butler out to Herman, be on your right-hand side after you pass the ball field.
Well, I've never seen a year like the year that we just had where the ground was so soggy all year long and trees kept falling, you know, just falling over. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Okay.
Well, good to talk with you, my friend.
Okay, and thanks for talking to you. Have a happy New Year.
And you. All right. So long.
Thanks.
283-2525, open talk, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
I could, just when I turned on and you began with the topics that you covered, I thought, good grief, somebody else does think like I do. I'm sick of Antonio Brown. I thought those people standing in the rain in New York were kind of off-center somehow. I mean, who would choose to put themselves in that position?
I have no idea.
I mean, you know, really and truly, the kicker was, Dave, and maybe you and anybody else who watched was, in the, I don't stay up that late. In fact, when my husband was alive, God rest his soul, I would fall asleep about 11:30, and he'd wake me up. I'd be on the couch to wish me a Happy New Year. This year, I fell asleep at 9:30, so I missed the whole thing. But the you were talking about, you know, the fact that they don't have porta-potties.
Yeah.
There were people there being interviewed, Dave, that I wouldn't tell anybody this. They were wearing diapers.
You're kidding. They actually
no,
said that?
No, I'm not. Dave, I thought, you know, am I going crazy?
Oh,
I mean, I am an old lady. I'm in my late 80s.
My God.
But it's like, you know, I really don't understand people anymore.
Boy, I don't either.
And like you, I'm tired of the wall. I don't want to hear another word about the wall. For one, I don't see how anybody thinks this is going to solve any security problem, this talking about a wall. And if we're not talking about a real wall, as Kelly said when he was interviewed as he's on his way out, that they don't mean a real wall, they're talking about security. Then talk about security. Don't talk about the fact that you are building a wall. My daughter was in from San Diego, and she said, yes, in their area they have problems. However, those that want to get through, especially the drug runners, they are building tunnels underneath.
Yeah, they have tunnels. They go out into the ocean and come back in. I hear you.
Yeah, you know, it's really weird. And Antonio Brown, you used my same words to some friends who came yesterday for brunch to visit with me. I am sick of these prima donna football players who earn, and I don't think they earn it. I'm sorry. When you're in entertainment, I despair of this idea that we pay celebrities, football players, these millions and millions of dollars.
A lot of money.
I think they're ruining the whole idea of sports, Dave, with this amount of money that they pay people.
I've got
a scoop. Then on to a subject that dear lady called about waste management.
I've got to interrupt you because I'm scheduled to talk with my guest here.
Oh, I'm sorry, hon.
He's going to be calling.
You tell her that's in Harrison Township and in Freeport now, too, that same company.
Okay, my
and
friend.
We're having the same problems.
Thanks much for the call. Happy New Year.
Okay, dear. Have a happy New Year.
All righty. Bye-bye. We'll take a break. We're scheduled to talk with our guest for today. His name is Louis Mazzullo, and we'll check in with him by telephone in just a few minutes. Be right back. A message at Christmas and holiday time from the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They would not only like to wish you and yours a very, very merry and holy Christmas and a happy New Year, but also to say thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of those who have supported them in their efforts during the past year. Thanks to those of you who donated to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, to those of you who patronized the thrift store. All the proceeds there go to help fund the food cupboard and the client aid program. And thanks to those of you who donated provisions to the food cupboard throughout the year. And thanks to those of you, too, who donated extra produce from your garden during the harvest season to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul food cupboard. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you and yours from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler. Up for discussion, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, by the way, and we're pleased to be able to chat with a very well-known individual in terms of education. His name is Louis Marzullo, and we're here to talk about the philosophy of education today. He thinks that we need to take another look at it. First of all, Louis, nice to have you with us here today. Looking forward to chatting with you, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, a little bit of background, folks. Louis Marzullo has been a special ed teacher in New York City and also an examination specialist for more than 30 years. So he's got a lot of theories on education, a lot of theories that have garnered national attention, as a matter of fact. What are the main areas of our educational system that need serious reform, in your opinion?
Well, Dave, I must say that I think that the problem is systemic. I think this, it's a system that's failing a great number of our students. If you look at the names of our national initiatives for education, the last one is Race to the Top. One before that was No Child Left Behind. I think if you have a model of education that's called a race, it implies that most of the people who are in the race will be losers. Only a few people can win the race. The fast runners win the race. The slower average runners do not win the race, and they're left behind. So I think the system works fine if you're a fast runner, if you're on a college track, if you're on an academic track. But if you're not college material or you don't aspire to go to college, then the system has no alternative, and you are left as a loser. We do not reward blue-collar work. We do not value vocational education. We only value the top. You could be a valedictorian and not contribute to your society. You are called the best and the brightest. Well, necessarily the brightest are not the best. But the system just acknowledges the fast runner on the academic track.
I can remember when No Child Left Behind came out, and I, within a few months, talked to any number of teachers here on the program, and they were very concerned, very displeased with the whole program. I got to be honest with you, Louis. I never even heard of Race to the Top. Has that one been under the radar, or just have I not been paying attention?
Yeah, it was under the previous administration, Obama and Arne Duncan, and there was a national incentive that you reached, if the district reached certain goals, that would get federal money. It included things like teachers being evaluated on the basis of the test scores of their students, which is very, very unpopular, and I think just furthers children being left behind. If you're a teacher and you're judged or assessed or paid on the basis of how many of your students pass tests, you're going to do whatever you can to get the brightest students. It would be equivalent to basketball. If you're a basketball coach and you're being paid for how many games you win, well, naturally you want the best players. I mean, no teacher gets rewarded. Even if you make progress, you don't get rewarded because you have to pass the exam. So let's say a 60 is passing. You have a student who's a 40 and you bring them out to a 50. Well, that doesn't count. It's got to only be the students who pass. And the students who passed last year, you know, they're going to pass this year. They may require not a lot of work on the teacher's part, but the teacher gets credit if the students pass. So it's a very, very unfair system. And fortunately, I think that the tide has turned in that direction, and people are seeing how test scores are being misused. I think that's turning. But what hasn't turned yet is valuing the students who do not aspire to higher education. Now, not every kid has to go to college, and certainly not every kid has to go to college right after high school. College is wonderful. I mean, I love school. I have several degrees. So it's not that I'm trying to devalue college. I'm not. I'm just saying for a lot of students, high school students, a more appropriate program for them would be a vocational track, so they could be graduate from high school with a certificate in vocational slash academic credentials.
Mm-hmm. What you mentioned a couple of moments ago was one of the big criticisms, probably the most common criticism that I heard from teachers, you know, people who are in there working on this. They said that we're being forced to teach to the test. That was the phrase they used, that they spend so much time trying to teach the test that they skip over other important areas.
Oh, it was terribly true. I saw this firsthand when the testing program began back in the 80s, and I was in New York City. And the English curriculum eliminated writing letters, eliminated looking at poetry. It was all based on this reading comprehension format that the city used at the time, which was a closed procedure. It's a terrible thing. It would be like, Dave, let's say I ask you to paint the room. So I want you to paint your office, but I want you to use a toothbrush. And you say, well, no, that's ridiculous. It's going to be streaky. I can't use a toothbrush to paint. Just use the toothbrush. And then you come back in an hour. I come back in an hour and I say, Dave, it's streaky. What are you doing here? The example I'm giving is so absurd. But if you expect the teacher to be a good teacher, you've got to let that teacher do what the teacher needs to do. You don't tell a baseball player you have to use this bat. You don't tell a basketball coach you have to use these drills. You don't tell a person who works in masonry that you have to use these particular tools. You have to let the teacher. Nobody talks to teachers. I'm glad you have them. You would say you've done this on your program. Nobody talks to teachers, and nobody listens to teachers. And a teacher who is forced to teach something that he or she does not believe is the proper thing for that course. And I hear the teaching. I mean, I was there teaching for the test. I saw it. The other thing I saw was teaching students the curriculum that maybe if you haven't grasped the previous material, then you need to go back and work on it. But the teacher is forced to follow the curriculum. Well, maybe the curriculum isn't right for all of our students. Maybe the student needs more work in something other than what the curriculum is calling for. And these are the areas that I think we really got to take a look at.
We've also seen in some parts of the country where the amount of funding that a school district will get is determined by test scores. I'm sure you're not in favor of that either.
Oh, it's the worst. It's probably the worst model you could do, because all you're doing is rewarding the kids who are at the top. It's exactly what I'm talking about. The kids who do not pass the test get the least money, get the least attention. They should be getting the most money, the most attention. There's any number of students in the district whose parents do not advocate for them. I would say it's probably nationwide. It's about 20%, maybe 15 to 20%. Obviously, it varies with districts. And the other thing I want to say before I go further, David, I know that I'm speaking in general terms, but I know there are exceptions and very good exceptions throughout the country. So I want to just acknowledge that I'm speaking in general terms. But the problem with the funding is that students whose parents do not advocate for them are the ones who are left behind. The other ones who wind up in worst schools, because their parents do not advocate for them. No principal wants a student in his or her school whose parent never shows up, because that means that you cannot work with a student at home. You cannot have parental support. So a district who is getting paid, it's like a basketball coach. If you're getting paid based on how many games you win, you're going to make sure you have good players, and you're going to make sure you have players who want to play basketball. How could you have a system where you have players who do not like basketball, who do not want to play basketball, and they're forced to be on your team, and you're forced to coach them, and you're going to be paid and rewarded on the basis of how many games you win? It's a recipe for disaster.
A parental involvement factor is a big one. I've also talked with numerous teachers over the years, not 100%, obviously, but I've talked with many, let's put it that way, who say you would not believe how many parents will come to a teacher conference inebriated. They said it's absolutely astonishing. And what can you do in a situation like that? Obviously, parents are not that much invested in their child's education.
Well, I think what you have to do, especially in the inner city schools, there are many students. That's not true, of course. A lot of schools will get 100% participation, and parents who are very involved, or maybe overly involved, helicopter parents, that's another problem. But I worked in districts where we would look out the window in Harlem and Washington Heights and New York City, and teachers would get together in parent night and just hope to get, you'd hope to get one parent. You would hope to get one out of whatever, however many students you have. Because it was working parents. They're coming at night. I think schools have to do a much better job with parents, especially in the inner cities. I think schools should be open until 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, and they should function after hours as a community center. There should be social services, ways to participate, ways to volunteer, and I'm not talking about taking. I'm talking about giving and taking. I think students should be involved in community service and student government. And should be working in the communities. And I think that's, you know, one of the things I used to suggest with parents when I worked in the inner city, the first day of school you're likely to see parents because they're dropping their kids off. The first time the parents are in a new school. Have something for them to eat, do food, do something. Find a way to encourage them to come to school. When they come to school, even if they're inebriated, at least you can work with them. At least that's the first step. I'd rather have a parent, I mean, sounds crude, but I'd rather have a parent who's inebriated than not have a parent at all, because at least the parents, then you have a chance to work with them. So, I mean, obviously it's not something we want to have a parent inebriated, but it's at least the parent is there and you have a chance to work with them. I'm more fearful of the ones you don't see and who do more harm to the students out of the sight of the teacher.
You have an intrigue. I never heard that idea before about keeping schools open until 5 o'clock in the evening. That's fascinating. I'll have to mull that one over.
Well, you know, when I was a student in the 50s, I went to Catholic school. The public school was open after school. So I'd come home, change my clothes, especially in the winter, run into the school. They had basketball, they had shop, they had counselors, they had softball, they had woodworking, they had chess, they had checkers. And I have a vivid memory of this. And I think the schools should be open. I think we need to have our, because a lot of students are involved in after school activities anyway. But we should do. They should be involved in community service. They should be working in their schools, doing a whole host of things. I definitely think schools should work as community centers and encourage parental involvement and parents to come after school and be involved in a whole range of activities.
Good food for thought here, listeners. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back to talk a little bit more with our guest, Louis Marzullo, about the philosophy of education here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. No worrying about traffic or expensive parking fees. Free Wi-Fi is also available. Park at a convenient park and ride or hop on the bus at the downtown bus terminal. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking about philosophy of education with Louis Marzullo, who's written a book with that title, by the way, and he has long-time experience, New York City special ed teacher and examination specialist for many, many years. Examination specialist. What's that mean, Mr. Marzullo? You gave tests or what?
Well, the position involved. When I was a teacher, I had a variety of roles, and they paid me a stipend to do the testing, be a testing coordinator in addition to my teaching activities. Well, the testing coordinator grew to be a full time job. Yeah. It's a tremendous job. You have to order tests, make sure the students who are getting extra time get extra time, make sure the teachers are prepared to know how to score the tests. That's another whole problem, teachers scoring tests. They don't want to score the tests. You have to make sure the results are in. You have to look over the results. I look for irregularities, which teachers are not scoring tests properly, report them to the administration. There's about five people who, I retired from teaching in 2010 and to write up a couple of books and do a variety of research. But the last couple of times, the last couple of meetings I went to were the most disappointing, and I'll just tell one brief story. The last time I went as a testing coordinator for our district, and again, I'll try to make a long story short here, there were 55 of us in this in this consortium, 55 testing coordinators from all different districts in lower New York. And the head of the group told us, he says, I want you to tell all your teachers to make sure that they tell their students not to leave any answers blank, not to leave any squares blank. It's a multiple choice, and there's a minute to go. You have them fill it in, A, B, C, D, all A's, whatever it is. And I raised my hand. I said, you know, I have a problem with this. But basically, telling our students to guess, and you're certainly going to get scores that are really, really unfair. I think it's better if a student doesn't know the answer, just, you know, leave it blank. If he has an idea of the answer, that's fine. But if there's 30 seconds to go, just to fill in any bubbles, I thought it was wrong. And not one testing coordinator, I looked around the room, and the people I knew, not one person raised their hand to agree with me. And I said, boy, oh, boy, we've really come a long way. And, you know, people, there's so many things that people don't realize. For example, a lot of the Hispanic cultures, certainly like Central America, Mexico, they don't like to guess. The recent arrivals, they don't, it's below their dignity to guess. So their attitude is more like, if I don't know it, I don't know it. I'm okay with that. But it's an American cultural thing to guess, to try to get the highest score you can, no matter what. It's a competitive model. And I'm only mentioning the other cultures because it's something that probably nobody will ever discuss. And I'm not trying to stereotype anybody. I'm just trying to point out that what happens in America does not necessarily happen elsewhere. So I saw things in testing day that you would make your hair stand up. Kids guessing. We used to figure out a guessing score. I was a math teacher in our school. We used to figure out if you guess, what's your average score? If you guess, you'd probably have to get about a 40%. And we would figure that if you guessed on all your answers, you'd have about a 1 in 5. Between a 1 in 5 and a 1 in 10 chance of passing. And both of us thought that's way, way too high. That's too high. Hmm. The algebra test was about 1 in 5. If you guessed, you'd pass the algebra test. How can you have a system like this? You can't. Its system is screwy from so many ways. Testing, it assumes that growth is even. It assumes you're going to grow an inch every year. Well, growth is uneven. Anybody will tell you that. Again, I use basketball in public because I coach basketball. I love to play basketball. My son is a good basketball player. The point is, you have growth spurts. Everybody knows it. This kid's playing ball. All of a sudden, one year, he has a growth spurt, physically and skill-wise, emotionally. Growth is not even. So a student who, the model for testing assumes that everybody will go from fourth grade to fifth grade to sixth grade to seventh grade. But people have leaps. People have leaps because of circumstances in their own development, their own personal development, in their educational experience and their social experiences. A student who travels all of a sudden the student seems to know a lot more about because he's traveled or she's traveled and they've broadened their experiences. They understand things in a different way. And I could give you 100 examples, but I don't want to, you know, just keep talking on this particular topic. Unless, of course, you want to hear more examples, I'd be happy to give them to you.
Are other countries in the world picking up on some of the reforms that you're suggesting? You know, many people like to think of Americans as exceptional, and yet, you know, we're seeing studies over the last couple of decades that we're falling behind in education. Other countries are passing us by.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that. And I think that the single most important one is our competitiveness, and goes back to what I said at the beginning of our show, Dave. The system rewards is built to win the race. It does not care. Our system does not care about educating people. You could be a valedictorian in a prestigious high school and not know the system of checks and balances, not be able to tell the difference between a democracy and a republic, not be able to find Afghanistan on a map, but you have higher test scores. It means you did something better than your opponent. And your opponent is your classmates. So the system does not encourage working together. You don't get rewarded if every student in your district has a certain level of knowledge. You get rewarded if your students pass the test scores, pass the tests. And you pass the tests, it's on a bell curve. If you pass the tests, if students, your neighbors, fail the test. Mm. Not everybody, the tests are designed so that not everybody passes. Or the tests are designed so that you can certainly look at the top all the way down. Everybody wants to see the graph. Everybody wants percentile rank. Other countries don't do this.
You are very...
Most other countries, they certainly don't do is insist that everybody has to go to college.
Yeah.
And if you're a worker, I just spent a month in Italy. I'm an Italian-American, and I have cousins in Sicily. And it's wonderful to go there. They value manual work. Nobody looks down on a person who's a mechanic or a woodworker. It's a different model completely. If you want to go to college by the time you're 16, or you pass the test, you go to college. If not, you work in a trade, either as an apprentice or with some local, you know, whatever your particular skill might be. But not everybody has to go to college. That's the thing that in other countries probably comes out the most. This Americans, from the time they're in pre-K, my wife teaches pre-K, they're already talking about college. They're supposed to go to college.
Wow.
And unfortunately, and that's another thing, our colleges are doing a terrible job, in my opinion, because they're not defining what they do. If your job is to educate people in life, then say that's what it is. If your job is to prepare students for a particular career, then say what it is. But you can't muddle the waters. You've got to define your mission, and I think the colleges have done a very poor job of defining their mission.
There's another area that you discuss at some length, and I find this very fascinating. You talk about the importance of teaching about morality. So the first question that pops up is, how can teachers discuss this without... You know, getting into dangerous territory, religious territory, for example.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up because it's one of my favorite topics, because it's something I've had a lot of success with working with students. Basically, and again, I don't want to talk too long, but basically, religion is a top-down model. Religion says, and I respect everybody's religious beliefs. Everybody's entitled to their own religious beliefs, and I'm not in any way denigrating any of them. Religion is a top-down model. It basically says that morality, or what we should do in life, what we should do, comes from the top, namely God. And God tells us what we should do, the Word of God, whether it's in the Bible or whatever it might be. What I try to tell the students is, you can believe whatever you want about God. Those are your religious beliefs. What I want you to think about is what comes from within you. So if we're going to work, for example, I'm working with student government. We're talking about what rules do we want for our school. I start from the bottom and say, look into your own within. I try not to use any words that have any religious connotation, like soul or sin. And I say, what rights do you want? For example, what rights do you want protected? What rights do you feel you should have? Well, I feel I have a right to my property not to be disturbed in the school. I have a right that when I speak, people should listen. I have a right to be respected for my own beliefs. Okay, fine. Once we establish what the rights are, now we can say, therefore, you have a corresponding responsibility to treat others that way. And students, every student understands this, that they're not special. That if I want this to be my right, I have to respect this as a right to others. So we begin to talk like this. What do you think you should do? How do you want to be treated? And therefore, how do we treat others? Yes. What rules do you want for the school? And why do you want them? And what does that mean for you? And then from there we can branch out into life. What rules do we think we need for life? What motivates our behavior? Look into yourself to think, what should you do? And let's see what we can come up with. And when you do this in the context of a group discussion, it lends itself to more and more students coming up with things.
I think that's terrific. I'm a big believer in natural law, to use a simple phrase. You know,
yeah.
I think to at least some degree, everyone knows, you know, this is right, this is wrong. I'm not sure.
Well,
I
believe that too. And we have to draw it out of our students. Education means drawing out. So we have to tap into it. If we don't tap into it, it will die. Instruction means putting in. Instruction is top down. to tell students what they should do is not the way to do it. The way to do it is what you're suggesting. Draw it out of students. Find out what is within you. Find out how does it feel when you do this? How does it feel when you do that? We have to educate our students. Everybody's afraid to do this because they think we're teaching religion. But we're not teaching religion. If a school has a rule, no cheating, well, there's a reason for that rule. Let's talk about that. So there's rules. Every institution has to have rules. We don't function otherwise. All I'm saying is let's take a look at those rules, where they come from, in terms of getting how we get along with each other and how we live our lives, and let's not be afraid to examine that.
What do you think about year-round education? Not totally. I had still a friend of mine. He was a German teacher, a very good one, as a matter of fact, and he spent a year in Germany teaching English. It was an exchange program. There was a German teacher that came here and taught in the local school district. And my friend who was teaching in Germany said, what an amazing difference. They do not have 3 months off in the summertime. Now, they get longer breaks, you know, longer holiday breaks here and there, but they don't shut down completely for 3 months. He thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, no, I agree with him. I think schools should be open 12 months a year. But I also think, I worked in many schools in New York City where there's no air conditioning. I could tell you stories. We test our students in the worst possible times, the dead of winter and the beginning of summer. I mean, the days are long. I had taught in a school where it was so hot, we even had fans on, it was so hot that the students' arms, when this was before computers, the students were sweating, and the sweat would go onto their papers so that you couldn't read the paper.
Wow.
I said to the principal, I said, this is our first teaching, maybe 1980, in New York City, maybe 1980, 82 was the first year. I said, what am I supposed to do? He had no answer. I said, students are sweating so profusely that I cannot read what they're writing on their test papers. Their sweat is pouring down their arms. I think schools should be open 12 months a year, but I think when in warm weather we need a different curriculum. We need an outdoor curriculum, a hands-on curriculum. Let's go hiking. Let's go swimming. Let's see how animals live. Let's have fun. Let's have games. Let's have competitive games like three-legged races or potato races or tugs of war where we work together. Let's do something in our community. Let's recycle, pick up the garbage. Let's beautify our communities. There's a lot of things that we can do that schools should be doing 12 months a year. But I think we have to be careful of the academic part when it's really, really hot. I know myself when in the summertime comes, I want to be outdoors riding my bicycle, playing on the beach, gathering shellfish. There's so many things we can do during the warm weather. So I guess I'm speaking also from New York. And if students need to go to school, I mean academics, I've seen great programs, and I actually worked in one or a couple where the academics were from like 8 in the morning to 11. I like to start early. I would start 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock before it gets too hot. 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock is our academics. And you can get more done. When you tell students we're going to leave it, it's only 2 hours or an hour or whatever it is. I find you get more done because the students know there's an end in sight. When I used to do remedial reading, I would tell the kids, when that big hand reaches the 12, you're out of here. and then it puts a limit on it, and the kids, okay. When it's all day long, the kids are going to suffer. They're going to be miserable. So I don't believe in academics over the summer, in New York at least, where it's warm climate. The kids should be outdoors, playing, digging for worms and so forth. So I'm in favor of 12-month education, but I'm also in favor of 12-month education with the caveat that we do outdoors, social activities, games, skills, fun stuff that involves cooperation and competition, but in a good way.
Reforming our educational system, the entire philosophy of education, making it something that students look forward to rather than something to be endured, I guess. It's a good book. If you're looking for our guest, Louis Mazzullo, online, it's Mazzullo, Louis Mazzullo, The Philosophy of Education. How great to talk with you, sir. Thanks for being with us here today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Dave.
Sure. So long now.
Bye-bye.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
And if you want
The Knock Knights get back to section play this Friday night, and WISR is there. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs inviting you to join me as it's Yawk at Knock. The Yawk Cougars come to town to take on the Knights Friday night. We'll have all the action beginning at about 7:15 with a tip-off slated for 7:30. Knock basketball here on WISR, presented in part by the Butler Health System, Butler County District Attorney Rich Goldinger, Heffron Tillison agent Mike McKee, Tri Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, the law firm of Dillon McCandless, King, Coulter, and Graham, Troy Allen Chevrolet and Slippery Rock, and Troy Allen Buick and Katanning, and the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation. It's Knock Basketball this Friday night right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
When I'm feeling blue, all I had to do is take a look at you. Then I'm not so blue. When you're close to me, I can feel your heartbeat. I can hear you breathing in my ear. Wouldn't you agree? Baby, you and me got a groovy kind of love. We got a groovy kind of love. Anytime you want to, you can turn me on to anything you want to, anytime at all. When I taste your lips, oh, I start to shiver. Can't control the quivering inside. Wouldn't you agree? Baby, you and me got a groovy kind of love. We got a groovy kind of love. Stars above me, how I love you.
what's your name? I have seen you before. What's your name? May I walk you to your door? It's so hard to find a personality with jaws like yours.
Attorney General number, PA4619. Hey, Mr. Schneider, the Johnsons saved 70% off their utility bills.
Oh, yeah?
They love their water furnace geothermal system.
Not surprised. Powering your home with free renewable energy?
That's stored up in the ground around your home anyway?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
They were impressed. Schneider's 1 hour took care of everything.
Like I say, start with the loop field.
Finish by installing equipment and ductwork.
Going geothermal is just being smarter.
From the ground up.
You can't beat the spot-on comfort level in your home.
Never too hot or too cold.
Cleans the air in your home.
So you breathe in less dust and other particulates.
Particulates?
It's a word.
You forgot one thing about water furnace geothermal systems.
Oh, they last way longer than average heat and air units.
Schneider's 1 hour. We absolutely do free in-home consultations.
Schneider's1hour.com.
Schneider's 1 hour. On time, day or night.
283-8525. what went wrong with our love, a love that was so strong. And as I still walk on, I think of the things we've done together while our hearts were young. I'm a walking in the rain, tears are falling and I feel a pain, a wishing you were here by me to end this misery. And I wonder why she ran away. She will stay, my little runaway. Run, 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 run away.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 3333. The pick 3 is 588. The pick 4, 9645. The pick 5, 94572. The wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt is 2, 4, 14, 20, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000. Aretha Franklin and Spanish Harlem.